Hey folks, summer is almost upon us, and we're here to get you through the last few weeks with another episode of Not Your Mother's Goose. I'm Topher Goggin. Coming up today, we'll hit leg two of the Disney Afternoon Triple Crown, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. We're also going to debut something called Newtonian Fairy Tales, ride some bicycles with Daisy Daisy, and check out your newest stop for fast food as we head through the drive-thru at Old McDonald's. Also, make sure you stay tuned till the end, or maybe just skip there now, because Andrew Mitchell is back with our latest Rapunzel's Jukebox tune, tackling Alan Clark, Graham Nash, and the rest of the Hollies with our version of Hey Mary's Lamb. Remember to check out notyourmothersgoose.com, where you can sign up for the Goose Droppings newsletter, access the secret episode, and get entered to our monthly prize drawing. Also, don't forget while you're there to check out some of our new YouTube content. We've got jukebox music both from Andrew and Tony D'Amico in a little blast from the past. For now, though, let's get things rolling. Apparently, there is a new version of Rescue Rangers coming to Disney Plus soon. I actually just saw that. So here is your chance to study up and make sure you can appreciate all the fine points. Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. We're back for another in-depth look at the programming of the Disney Afternoon, and today we're going to fix your problems. Let's say you're in the market for some detective help, but the budget's a little tight. You're not going to be able to afford Sherlock Holmes, or even Sherlock Hemlock from Sesame Street. What you need is a detective agency that combines the mental prowess and cooperation skills of the Three Stooges with the evolutionary biology and high-pitched singing voices of Alvin and the Chipmunks. You need Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. You may primarily remember Chip and Dale from their A Tale of Two Chipmunks days, where they spent most of their time doing things like sailing the high seas and menacing Donald Duck with rotten apples. If you're trying to recall how to tell them apart, Chip was the practical, know-it-all, slightly bossy, and generally annoying one. In other words, Chip was childhood me. Dale, on the other hand, was the wilder, happy-go-lucky nutball with the red nose that seemed destined for a visit to the emergency room. Think of it this way. If you need somebody to fill in shushing people for the day because your librarian is out sick, call Chip. If you're having a party across the street from the library, invite Dale, but make sure that you have an EMT available. For the Rescue Rangers program, the folks at Disney decided it would make sense for these two to open up their own detective agency. Because why not? Chip gets himself a fedora and a bomber jacket, meaning his Rescue Ranger qualifications are half Ranger Smith from Yogi Bear and half Indiana Jones. Dale, on the other hand, shows up to work in a Hawaiian shirt and no pants. He'd probably like you to believe he was going for a Magnum PI look, but it's more of a bowling league in Margaritaville vibe, if you ask me. The agency has two other employees. One is a big Aussie mouse named Monterey Jack. Monty has a special place in my heart, as he's got a bit of a cheese addiction to the point he'd probably put cheese on his bloomin' onion at Outback. Then we've got the actual brains of the operation, an inventor gal named Gadget. She's the one responsible for the flying device the crew rides in the intro that appears to consist of a toothpaste tube and the world's largest jelly bean refashioned into a modified Goodyear blimp. Now, as noted earlier, the crew isn't really bogged down with solving big mysteries. They're kind of like the Judge Judy of detective agencies. Small claims only, mostly working against the evil schemes of a gangster cat and a mad scientist named Norton with the approximate technical skill of the professor from Gilligan's Island. Though the time he used a laser cannon to make a giant evil jello mold does mean that my grandma would have been a fan. So, 30 minutes of rudential detection is all you'll need to solve today's case, but our cartoon block is not done. Come back next time, where we've got another tale to spin, as the Jungle Book quite literally takes flight on Tailspin. Stay tuned. You should know here at Not Your Mother's Goose, we are firmly committed to the idea that everyone should be well informed about the news. We also highly recommend not getting that news from us. But here's our newscast anyway. Citing safety concerns, Tigger not invited to Piglet's birthday party at Trampoline Park. Mad Hatter disappointed to learn today is not his unbirthday. And now we're off to Broadway with this headline, Disaster Strikes Pac-Man Musical. When your Broadway musical tanks, most producers have a list of excuses at the ready for the blame, with Haunted Theater being near the top of the list. But this time, the ghosts are not the culprits for the troubles that plagued the debut of Pac-Man the Musical. The show opened in previews last week at the Gershwin Theater, with industry insiders expecting big profits. The costume department had already outfitted Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde for $56 in one trip to the betting section at Target, and the orchestra was replaced by a kid with a synthesizer that only needed to play about five notes. What they hadn't considered was the concession stand. Everything was going swimmingly until roughly 20 minutes into Act 1, when theatergoer Bart McDonald tripped returning to his seat in Row D, spilling his extra-large bucket of popcorn all over the lower level of the theater. Spotting the resulting line of yellow pellets, Pac-Man broke off his dialogue and instinctively began racing in and out of the aisles, scarfing every kernel in his path. Mayhem ensued, and could not be contained until the crazed Pac-Man spotted a guest with some cherries and got stuck in the top corner of the theater long enough for ghosts to converge. Show staff plan to implement a water-only policy at future performances and say they're glad that nobody was selling caramel corn that could have clumped together into one of those super pellets. While generally panning the production, a New York Post reviewer did note that the show should win a Tony for staging based on Pac-Man's ability to walk off stage right and simultaneously walk back on stage left. Let's take a quick commercial break so we too can grab ourselves something to eat.
It's time to talk about things that start with F. Don't worry, these are family friendly. But what do you get when you combine fairy tales, farms, and my favorite, fast food? You get your new favorite place to eat, Old McDonald's. Buy your grub from Old McDonald and you won't have to settle for a Big Mac here and a Big Mac there. Try our villain value menu. The Big Bad Wolf loves the McPig, and Shere Khan always orders the number 4 Mowgli meal. And with every villain's favorite, the Filet-O-Fred, you can eat like the baddies without having to steal like them. If you ask for the Peter Pan meal at Wendy's, you know you'll just end up saying, E-I-E-I, no. Come see us at Old McDonald's and get the gingerbread man for dessert, because you know Prince Hans won't be fixing the ice cream machine. It's Old McDonald's, fantasy food fresh from the farm. Just don't ask for a happy ever after meal.
That's the return of our big voice guy, Mark Robertson, last heard as the badass bullfrog personal injury lawyer back in episode 11, a performance that's going to be hard to top, though a Filet-O-Fred is a good start. Now that we're nourished, we've got some more headlines for you. Tinkerbell recuperating after incident with Bug Zapper. Dr. Seuss sets email record after Spam IM takes over marketing. And in business news, Iago launches new fairy tale reality tour. Tired of hanging out with Jafar and molting all day, wisecracking parrot Iago is set to try his hand in the small business world again. Bouncing back from an ill-fated stint owning the Tiki Room, Iago is following in Cosmo Kramer's footsteps by launching his own fairy tale neighborhood tour. Inspired by Hollywood celebrity home tours, Iago promises guests top secret maps that will guide them to all their favorite fairy tale sites. And we're not just talking about the Sultan's castle. According to an itinerary leaked online, the two-hour walking tour begins with a stroll by Little Red Riding Hood's grandma's, though for safety reasons, guests are encouraged not to enter. It's a different story later, though, with an interactive stop where tour members play Goldilocks and break into the Three Bears' house in the woods. Discounts are offered for guests who bring their own crowbar. The tour continues on, past Jack's Beanstalk and Rapunzel's Tower, then concludes with hot dogs and marshmallows at the same campfire where Rumpelstiltskin was overheard chanting his name by the Queen's servant. Adventurous guests can also purchase a $50 add-on, allowing them to trip-trap across the Three Billy Goats Gruff Bridge, but only after signing a 7-page waiver covering troll-related injuries. Daisy, Daisy. Listen, fairy tales may be all about the romance, the prince, the white horse, all that crap, as George Costanza would say. But let me tell you, it is a different story when you switch to nursery rhymes. None of these folks are flying any magic carpets around Agrabah, if you get my drift. Think about it. You've got Georgie Porgy making the girls cry. You've got that dude on top of old Smokey who's courting too slow, not to mention handling his romance atop a smoking volcano. And you got Peter Pumpkin Eater and his wife storage issues. None of these people are winning any awards, but you want to know who really comes up short? It's the fella from the Daisy/Bicycle Built for Two song. This has got to be the single worst marriage proposal that I have ever heard. Let's review. First, he's pretty pushy right out of the gate with this whole Daisy, give me your answer deal. But then, I'm half crazy all for the love of you. I get the concept of trying not to come on too strong, but when you're proposing, it's probably okay to admit being a minimum of 3/4 crazy for their love, I'd think. The rest of the song reads like the fine print at the end of a commercial for some new hemorrhoid cream. Just so you know, it won't be a stylish marriage, and I ain't got the scratch to get you a carriage or anything, so don't be making any plans. And if this part wasn't enough of a struggle, your buddy then has the nerve to announce that the gal should be planning to pedal her own rump around town. Initially, this sounds sweet with the whole bicycle built for two deal, but listen closely. You'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two. Doesn't sound to me like this fella has any plans to push the pedals himself. It's not, but you'll bring glee right next to me. I think he's sending Daisy out on a one-woman Peloton ride. Captain Romance might as well just be honest and say, you'll be sweaty as wet spaghetti on your bicycle built for two. Just hope it comes with some of that hemorrhoid cream. Newtonian fairy tales? It's time to debut a new segment on the show. I noticed that one of the things we're lacking here is a good dose of physics. Let me pause for a moment while you frantically try to find the button to close the media player down. To bridge that gap, today we're going to introduce a new concept, Newtonian fairy tales. Despite your attempts to forget it, my guess is that you remember Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Pool balls collide and they recoil. Gravity pushes you down on the floor pushes back up on you. But since fairy tales obey the law of physics, sometimes, that means Newton's laws must apply here too. And that means that for every old Mother Hubbard, there must be a tale of young Mother Hubbard. For every story of Little Red Riding Hood getting eaten, there must be a story of Big Red Riding Hood suplexing the Big Bad Wolf in a WWE ring. Or maybe that'd be the Little Bad Wolf. Or the Little Good Wolf. I'm a little rusty on my own physics. I better call Professor Bolton. Regardless, with all of these equal and opposite fairy tales out there, somebody needs to tell them, and I don't see Pixar stepping up to the plate so far. That means it's up to us. In the future, maybe we'll actually turn these into a full story or two like we did with the fairy tale typos, but for now, let's just consider some major plot points. The obvious place to start is when little becomes big. That means you've got the big red hen, who probably has to stop baking her bread to spend most of her tail running away from Colonel Sanders. The three big pigs have similarly moved on from wolf issues to trouble with Oscar Mayer. Little boy Blue is a big kid now, becoming big boy Blue once he graduates to pull-ups. And if you're a field mouse, you definitely don't want to get bopped on the head by Big Bunny Fufu, who sounds like some sort of villain from a Monty Python movie. Of course, it's not all about little and big. Young King Cole was probably an angsty old soul going through some sort of emo phase. And if we assume we reverse everything, including the order of the verses, then I'm very interested to listen to the long-lost tune of I Know a Middle-Aged Lady Who Puked Up a Horse. Continuing with this, that means that somewhere out there is a not Rapunzel trapped in an underground bunker but with a pixie cut, not to mention a 7-year-old named Paul Pan on the other side of the aging idea who enjoys bingo and Lawrence Welk. Sadly, the handsome duckling is not going to like where the old age truck takes him, and since we just said Paul is the opposite of Peter, then be on the lookout for Peter Bunyan, the world's smallest lumberjack who hires himself out to chop down dandelions in people's yards. So that's just a few examples, but like we've done with other things, I want to hear yours. If you've got an idea of a Newtonian fairy tale or nursery rhyme, post it on the Not Your Mother's Goose Facebook page or email it straight to me at topher@notyourmothersgoose.com. Maybe you'll end up hearing it on the show. Until then, make sure you take your calculator if you decide to buy a pie from Complex Simon and be on the lookout on your waterspouts just in case the critters aren't so itsy-bitsy and you find yourself shrieking, "It's a big-ass spider!" Stomp that thing with a shoe. Just make sure there isn't an old, or young, I guess, woman living in it. The Three Stooges. If you're in the mood for some comedy, but a good booger joke is a bit too highbrow for your tastes, I've got the solution you need. Just dial up your time machine and tune in to The Three Stooges. We gave the Stooges a shout out not long ago during the Rescue Rangers bit, but I think they deserve their own segment here. So let's start from the beginning. The Three Stooges featured four Stooges. Larry as Larry, Moe as Moe, Curly as Curly, and Dick Sargent as Shemp. Best as I can tell, Shemp was like your junior varsity stooge that sometimes got called up to the big team. But then there was also a fake Shemp. You should always verify the authenticity of your Shemp before making a purchase. His name was Joe, but he shouldn't be confused with a different Joe who became a fill-in stooge after fake Shemp, or a final stooge, Curly Joe, who was played by someone named Joe. If you run into a friend named Joe at a party, but you can't remember what he does for a living, guessing that he's a stooge actually gives you a very high probability of being right. For our purposes, though, we're going to focus on the Larry, Moe, and Curly years, which were roughly contemporaneous with when Fred Flintstone was alive. Generally, what you're looking at are the adventures of three knuckleheads, or in this case, knuckleheads, with very short tempers and a penchant for poking each other in the eyes. Also, don't expect to see the Stooges advertising for Pantene anytime soon, as Curly, with a hair rating of absent, was clearly the winner in the styling department. Moe went with the bowl cut before the bowl cut was cool, though I guess that's true of every single fourth grader who's ever had a bowl cut. And then there's Larry. Larry's hair resembles an aerodynamic diagram showing how the Bernoulli principle allows an airplane to fly. I also suspect that Larry may have later modeled for Bozo the Clown's barber. Now, in hopes of describing the average Stooges plot for you, I've gone back and reviewed one of their shorts. In just over 4 minutes that I watched, Moe has busted Larry cheating in a card game while playing for pancakes. Curly has written a glue jingle to try to win a radio contest. Moe has stolen back the pancakes he lost, but then poured Curly's glue on them rather than syrup and glued his mouth shut. Curly has then become jealous of Moe eating all the pancakes, taken some for himself, and also glued his mouth shut, and the shut mouths have been addressed through the use of a boiling hot tea kettle and an industrial-sized pair of pliers. They've also hit each other in the head enough times that they may have to get checked in the NFL concussion protocol just to return to the episode, and that was 4 minutes. The Stooges performed together for 50 years. Thankfully, we are not going to summarize another 50 years of Stooge storylines, but there is one that must be highlighted since we're here on Not Your Mother's Goose. The Stooges got invited onto the Disney show Off to See the Wizard on an episode titled Who's Afraid of Mother Goose? And which nursery rhymers did they play? You got it. Rub-a-dub-dub, three Stooges in a tub. I only hope that Curly had to count them. One, what comes after one? Just like the old days where the jukebox would be out of commission for a little bit while they put new CDs in, we had to give Andrew Mitchell a little bit of a break after our music specials. But Andrew is not only back with a new song today, but he reports that he's been to the store where he's acquired a tambourine, an egg shaker, and a new recorder, and we'll hear them all in upcoming songs. From what my ears detect, we get the egg shaker today, so stay tuned for the rest of those things soon enough. For now, we've got the first of two tunes where I got the initial idea in the parking lot of our local Walgreens. Obviously. This one is the 60s hit from the Hollies, Hey Carrie Ann, but now serenading a sheep as Hey Mary's Lamb. What's nice about this is that Hey Carrie Ann basically doesn't rhyme. I guess the Hollies saved their rhyming lyrics for Bus Stop, and that allows quite a bit of flexibility in the writing department. So with that established, that I don't actually think learning and teacher are rhyming words, here comes the return of Andrew Mitchell. It's Hey Mary's Lamb on Rapunzel's Jukebox.
Hey Mary's Lamb, Hey Mary's Lamb, followed me to school, that's what your song says. Your fleece was white as snow, went everywhere I go, made the other children laugh and play too. Hear something bleating, at least not mooing. Hey Mary's Lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Mary's lamb. What's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Lambs inside a school, well, that's not legal. I got in trouble, you got booted. Don't get confused with Baba Black Sheep. If you get lost, I'll send in Bo Peep. Hey, Mary's lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Hey, Mary's lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Like snow, oh, it's so wide it's your fleece. It's just so wide it's your fleece. Snow, oh, it's so wide it's your fleece. Just so wide it's your fleece. Hey, Mary's lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Hey, Mary's lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Kids who see a lamb don't do much learning. They've all got questions. Pity the teacher. Why do you love Mary? She loves you too. You don't see that love from little boy blue. Hey, Mary's lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Hey, Mary's lamb, what's your aim? Why'd you follow her that day? Mary's lamb, Mary's lamb, Mary's lamb.
Hey, Mary's lamb. Andrew Mitchell subs in for all of the Hollies on Rapunzel's Jukebox on Not Your Mother's Goose. If you want more of that, be sure to drop by notyourmothersgoose.com, where we've got direct links to plenty more tunes on YouTube, and even more stuff is coming. That's a wrap on today's show, but we'll be back soon with the Belmont of the Disney Afternoon as we wrap up our series with Baloo and Tailspin. We'll also get into everyone's favorite in the podcast world as we investigate the truth behind the Gingerbread Man on our new true crime segment, Not Your Mother's Goons. Thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful beginning to your summer. I'm Topher Goggin, and the goose is loose. Join us again for more on Not Your Mother's Goose.